Good evening. My name is Sheila Armstrong. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sheila.
I've been sober since December 15th, 1984. And for that period, thank you. For that period of time, I'm almost always grateful. Almost. I want to thank the committee and for inviting me, first of all. It's nice to come back to Des Moines. I've been here before. And it's, you know, nice to be invited back somewhere when you're like me. And I know how hard it is to put something like this together. Our group does stuff like this, and we're a real active AA group. My home group is the Phoenix Group in Norman, Oklahoma. We're at 227 West Main. We're right in the middle of Main Street. People see us all the time. We're right in the middle of everyone. We stand out there and drink coffee and shake people's hands. And, you know, our town isn't quite sure what we are yet, but they know, but they don't know. You know, some know, And you know, it's funny because people get sober and they say, my God, this group is right out here in the middle of Main Street. What if somebody sees me? And I said, oh, well, they didn't see you fall off a bar stool. Okay, fine. They'll probably applaud and honk their horn when they see you here. You know, don't worry about that. Everyone has just been so nice to me since I got off the plane. And it's nice to be greeted, you know, I was glad I made it here. I couldn't get out of Oklahoma first because every plane kept being canceled, and I was real okay with it until they canceled so many I wasn't going to meet my connecting flight. So I said, okay, I've got to be in Des Moines. I mean, I just have to be there. And the lady was really nice and put me on several different airlines, and and I got here and by jets and everything. It was good. I was worried. And the food was great for the people that have, you know, worked really hard, and you know, and I have a lovely fruit basket, and I'm such a fruit, and I love fruit, so I'm really just really privileged to be here. I want to thank my Heidi and Aaron both for picking me up and being so excited, and it was just so uplifting. You know, sometimes people pick you up and God love them, they have a sign and they look like they're going to kill themselves. In fact, a girl I sponsor and I, we went to a conference out west, and the girl, you know, I always ask questions like, well, how did you get to pick me up, or how did you get to be my hostess? And she said, well, to be honest with you, I was going to kill myself a week ago. And we're driving on kind of a curvy road, and I said, well, how are you feeling right now? And I could drive at any moment if you need me, okay? And I thought, great, you know, so I carried her all weekend, and we had a great time. I want to thank one of my babies, my pigeon, as you call it here, Peggy Barton, for coming. She came all the way from Wisconsin to come see her sponsor. That's pretty neat. And she brought some girls she sponsored and friends, and ladies, thank you for making the trip. You know, I used to get in the car. I still get in the car a lot. When I was new, I just would have to get in the car. That's my sponsor. You say, Sheila, where are we going? Just get in the car. You don't have a car, so get in ours. And I thought, well, okay, I will. And I would get in the car with people I didn't quite like, nor want to go with anywhere. Some of them I wouldn't even drink with personally. But I would do this because I was at a point of desperation when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was fresh out of ideas. I didn't have any more plans. If you're sitting here tonight and you got a plan, I'd run it by my sponsor if I were you. It's always a good thing to run those plans by your sponsor. They'll filter it out for you. But I would get in the car and I would go places and I'd meet wonderful people like you, and it gave me so much hope. You know, and I got to stay here, you know, one day at a time, and until I caught alcoholism, and I stayed here. You know, I just caught it. I mean, it was like, my dad was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, as some of you know, and you know, I was, I've just been kind of tearing up sitting here. You guys have kind of a, you know, I get gushy. I wish I were a tough broad like I used to be. I really get tired of this teary thing that goes on from time to time. And, you know, there's this, Jackie, this little young lady in front of me. I noticed her dad was here. And, they were going over their raffle ticket situation. And, you know, my dad used to buy me raffle tickets when we'd be somewhere together. My dad is no longer, he has been dead for 3 years, but he was a great member of AA. And so I saw her, and, you know, she's got 3 months, 4 months? She's got 4 months. And I just remember when I had 4 months and I could be in a meeting with my dad. And what I wouldn't give right now to get to do that. And I got to watch them. And I think, oh, you know, I just wanted to tell her, you're in for such a ride, darling. And it's fun. Just hang on. It was just funny because they were going over their route. And I just had a moment here that we used to do that. You know, it was just really neat. Thank you for that. I'm really going to be all right through this, I swear, I hope. I got to pull it together here. I didn't start talking. And Sean, the newcomer, that you know, I mean, that's so great. I love that story that he was in trouble, and the guy that, you know, the book and the introducing, and he's the one. I just love that kind of stuff. I just eat that up today, you know. I used to not think much about it when I got here first, you know. It's a great deal. Who cares? You guys are all a bunch of softies around here, you know. Now I sit here and bubble up, you know. It's just horrible. Stick around. You'll be bubbling one day. Well, I'm going to tell you my story, and for those of you that heard it, well, too bad. I only got the one, you know. Just got the one. I was born in Oklahoma. I was born to two normal alcoholic parents. They did what normal alcoholic parents do. They get drunk and fight and get divorced. And I have a younger brother. He's 13 months younger than I am. And my parents got divorced before I ever remember they were married. I was so young. And my father moved to California, and I lived with my mother. And my mother was a nurse. I thought my mother was the most beautiful woman I had ever seen. I absolutely loved my mother. I was her little girl, and she took care of us. And unfortunately, I believe my mother had the disease of alcoholism, and she was gone a lot, and she would go into blackouts. And she was a real alcoholic, and she would leave for periods of time and be a missing person. We'd go and live with my grandmother and stuff like that, and it was just alcoholism. And one day the social workers came, and they took us and put us in a foster home. My brother and I, we were 7 and 6 years old, and I was not to see my mother again until I was 19 years old. And I know that's alcoholism today. Because of this magnificent program, I've learned that that's what alcoholism is. My father came to California. He got wind that his children were in a foster home, and he came and he got custody of us. Now, that was many years ago. It was not vogue for men to get custody of their children. You know what? That just didn't go on. And my dad came, and unfortunately, we went to live in California, and unfortunately, my father had the disease of alcoholism, and he and the nice lady he was married, to a wonderful lady, she's a nice Mexican lady, and there were about 350,000 people picked us up at the airport, and they were pinching and hugging, and we had a fiesta, and it was like this big party because we arrived, you know, and I thought, you know, I'm pre-alcoholic, I'm loving this, I'm a party for me, it's all about me, loved it, and there was a piñata, and there was drinks, and everybody fussed and fought, and got mad at each other and made up the next day, you know, and I like that kind of life. I do. I'm real addicted to that stuff, and I thought, this is going to be a fun family. I liked it, and unfortunately, they didn't stay together, and she left one night in the middle of the night because, you know, she didn't have Al-Anon. She didn't have any kind of a solution for alcoholism in her life, and so she left, and I wouldn't see her again until I was 18 years old, you know, and that's alcoholism, and that's pure and simple. My brother and I went to live with my uncle, and my father's drinking was really bad, and he was about ready to go to prison for some embezzlement and some DUIs and things like that, and he had gotten in trouble. And when I was 10 years old, a magnificent thing happened in my life. My father got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it would change my life forever, although I didn't know that at the time. He was in an incredible group. It's the Pacific Group in California, and it was just starting. The group was just starting, and he got sober. And my aunt and uncle, I lived with them in Arizona. My brother and I, and we came back to California. And he and his sponsor Clancy had sat down and realized that there was only one thing that they could do. My dad could do, and we had to go to live in another foster home. And we were going to live there. It was a black foster home, so we were all supposed to be there a couple of weeks till I guess they could find a white foster home. And so we lived there for 3.5 years. And it turned out to be one of those things, I think, where it's just you have a divine appointment to be somewhere. And the lady and the man that took care of us were really, really wonderful people, and they loved us a lot. And more kids came to the home. There was a Sioux Indian, Myron, he came, and then Hilda, she's a little Mexican girl, and my foster mother had her own son, Walter, and my brother and I. And I always say this, we would sit around the dinner table or lunch, and it looked like a meeting of the Junior United Nations, you know. I mean, it was kind of neat. And You know, we didn't know prejudice or color. We didn't know any of that. Unfortunately, when we went to school, that would be brought up, and I'd come home and say, "What is a honky?" And she would tell me. And she would also follow it with, "That is ignorance," you know. And it was like there was so much love in that home, and we were all so close. And it was just, it was a good time. And my father, because of strong sponsorship and the spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and action, he would come, every weekend and visit us. And the other kids, their parents didn't come a lot, you know, but my dad would come and he was try to be, you know, participate in our lives. And I could tell there was a change coming over him. I didn't know what it was, and well, I didn't, you know, really particularly care. I just, you know, was just kind of rolling along. And so my dad married a nice lady in AA when they had two kids, and he had two kids, and we got together, but it was not the Brady Bunch, I can tell you that. And it was kind of crazy. And you know, and it was, I was just so needy. I was so needy back then. I really wanted a mom. I really always just wanted a mom. And, you know, and this lady that he married was a great lady, a nice lady, but she had lost one child to cystic fibrosis, and she was about to lose another one, you know, and she just, you know, she was only doing the very best she could do. And today I know that, you know, but back then it was, you know, me, and I need. And that marriage did not stay together. And we went down the street to live with her sister. So we live down the street. Well, the prom comes around, and I haven't been drunk at this point, but I sure could use something. I tell you what, I had had some sips of beer in here and there along the way, but I don't really remember my first drunk till I was 15. You know, my dad lived down the street. We would I'd come home from like cheerleading practice or something, and he'd be out watering, and I'd wave and they'd say, "Who's that?" And I go, "That's my dad." And they go, "Your dad? Your dad lives down the street from you?" And I go, "Yeah, didn't yours?" You know, it was, you know, it's like the big book talks about the abnormal becomes normal. It just wasn't that big a deal, you know. And we got along better when he lived down the street. My father and I did not get along for many, many years. I mean, he said blue and I say green, you know, and it was just, we clashed. And he and my brother got along pretty good. So I got asked to the prom. The guy came up. It was terribly romantic. He said, "You don't have a date and I don't have a date. Would you like to go to the prom?" I thought, how romantic, let's go. So my aunt is so kind. You know, she has four children. She's a single mother, has four children, and took my brother and I in. And I think that's a kind woman. And she and her mother also lived there with us. And so she took me all by myself to go get my dress because she wanted it to be, like, special for me. And so we go, and, of course, I pick out this low-cut, kind of tight yellow dress. And she picks out this giant green dress, and it kind of went bellowed out, you know, and it had these big green flowers all over it, and it had like an accordion neck that went way out with a ruffle, and I'm dying when she's going, "This is so beautiful." I'm like, okay, well, I'm getting in a little trouble though, because I'm you know, I'm kind of starting to smoke cigarettes and stay out a little later and go out with the guys that she doesn't want me to go out with. I'm kind of pushing the envelope. And I'm the kind of alcoholic, I'll push you, and right when you're about to go over the edge, I do something really wonderful. I'm one of those. I really hacks people off, you know. And a lot of the men identify with this for some reason. And so I do something really wonderful, and then you love me again, and it's all wonderful. I'm just a real sick alcoholic, actually. And so I know it's time to do something really wonderful here, because she's about to push me over an edge. Actually, she's pretty tired of me. So I thought, oh, I got it. So I get the dress. You know, I think, what the heck, you know? So I get the dress, she's so happy. She said, "Will you go to my hairdresser?" And I thought, nobody goes to the hairdresser, you know? I mean, back then it was the 70s, mid-70s, you wore your hair long and straight, and I had hair down to my back, you know? And maybe you curled it at the ends on a super special occasion, and that was about it. Well, so I said, okay, you know, and I look at that today in hindsight, and I think, you know, her daughters didn't go to the hairdresser. What was I thinking? But anyway, so I went, and I said, how bad could this be? And the lady said, how would you like it? And I said, you know, I just want, like, maybe a little up here and then down. And so she put me under the dryer for a couple, 3 hours, it seemed like. And the top of my ears are not ever going to be the same. I mean, she melted them, I think. And so I, you know, and she starts doing my hair, and it's just, my hair is growing is what's going on. And it came out this big, you know, and it kept going like a football. You know, she kept pulling his hair up and ratting it. I mean, there were so many hairpins in it. I still can find a couple today. You know, I there's one. You know, just kidding. But really, it was like I found hairpins for days in my hair, and I hated myself. But my aunt comes running in, and she's got this baby's breath, and she goes, "Oh, you look so beautiful." So they start putting this baby's breath in it. You know, it's like, let's add insult to injury, okay?
And I'm like, oh my God. And she said, I was like stunned. What do you think? I couldn't even talk. So we go, and then I put the giant green dress on, and I'm a bush in bloom, okay? I hate myself. I'm 15. She's identifying. Are you identifying? It's horrifying. No wonder I'm an alcoholic, huh? Anyway, and so I'm like 15. I have all these emotions, and I look like a dog going to the prom. So anyway, so the guy, to make things worse, this guy that I'm going with, 3 days before the prom, he bites the head of a live frog off. For $100, $100 bet. Oh, I needed money for the prom. I said, I'd loaned it to you. You know, I mean, in front of everybody at school, it was like, and I wasn't around him, and everybody comes running up to me, like, oh, you're going to the prom with just bit the head off a live frog. And I thought, could anything ever go right just once? I was sick. So anyway, so we rush off, you know, and he comes in, and my foster mother comes to the thing. My dad comes from up the street, you know, it's Dysfunction Junction. It was great, you know. Love it, you know. It was fun. Everybody's like, who's this? That's my aunt. That's my foster mother. That's my stepmother. My real mother's not here. My dad's over there. It was great, you know. And I'm real normal with it. I'm not all dramatic or anything because it's normal. This is my life. And I was okay with it. It was like, and until everyone said, you know, I kind of figured out what a normal, but I thought it was normal. So anyway, so then my dad stand there, and I want my dad to be really proud of me. You know, there's a part of me that really wants to be that daughter, you know. But I do everything I can to push him away, and I've done that. I did that with him most of my life. It's like, love me, love me, love me, and I do everything I can to push him away. And it was so hard on him. And so he comes in, and my date shows up looking like, you know, he's a mortician. You know, he didn't have the right tux on. He didn't match me. Nothing. But he got the wrong, everything was wrong. So my cousin, my little cousin Kelly comes in, he comes running in, he goes, hey, are you the guy that bit the head off a live frog? And I don't want anyone to know this, you know, and my dad goes, what? You know, and his eyes kind of glaze over, roll up in his head. I'm just mortified. So we scoot out of there, I go, let's get out of here, and we get into his car. And, you know, a lot of them like borrow like, you know, a nice car, you know, in their grandmother's Cadillac or something. You know, he had a Dodge Dart. And he told me it was a classic. Well, it is now, but it wasn't then. It was his own, you know. It is now. And it put, you know, he goes, watch this, you know, and you push a button and it started. And I'm like, well, that's it, okay, that's all. And I was just sick. We're driving the Dodge Dart to the prom. And so he had champagne in the car. And it had those little glasses, those little plastic ones. He didn't even get glass. I was so sick. And, you know, that little thing, the bottom always falls off. I'm trying to look as cool as I possibly can. And, I'm trying to sit my drink down. It falls over because of the little thing. And I'm putting the thing back on. I'm trying to look like I know what I'm doing. And, I'm just having a little wine. Go to the prom, no big deal. But we went to the after parties. Now, the after parties is where it gets going. And I really loved it. It was neat. And people came up to me and they were like mixing drinks in my little sweet dumb glass that the thing kept falling off. And people go, they made me tequila sunrises and greyhounds and margaritas. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to get drunk. I mean, come on, this is a little tiny glass. I had 150 of those puppies, and let me tell you what happened. My hair got long and straight. Those flowers flew off my dress, and frog lips started looking really good. And I mean that kind of good, you know, yeah. And he was wonderful. I was like, yeah. And, I was free. I was so free. I thought I was okay. And you were okay. Even better, I liked you for the first time. You know, because I didn't like me. I didn't like my life. I didn't like the way I looked. I didn't like anything about me. And I certainly wasn't crazy about you. You know, and that's how I felt. And when I drank alcohol, I felt better. I just felt better. I felt better about everything around me. My dress wasn't even that bad, you know, and nothing had changed. Absolutely nothing had changed, but everything changed when I put that inside of me. And so I got drunk. I passed out, blacked out, and threw up. I mean, that's, you know, what I did my first drunk. And, you know, that's really my drinking. I mean, I drink to excess. I'd never went for like long periods of time without drinking. I didn't go drink every day. I mean, I was 15 years old. I drank whenever I could get it, you know, whenever I could get it. And I never thought it was going to be a problem because it was just partying. You know, I thought, you know, Dad's an AA and, you know, that's nice for them. And I babysit everybody's kids and, you know, I loved AA, you know, but it wasn't for me. I mean, for you, that's nice, Dad. But I'm not going to be an alcoholic, you know. I'm going to show you, your hat will be off to me, by gosh, you know. And that's how I felt, and I never thought it was going to be a big deal. And
And so I just drank and partied when I could, and I liked it. I mean, I never thought it was a big deal. I got out of high school. I started becoming a waitress. I loved waitressing, and I worked nights, and I slept all day, and it was my kind of life. You know, I could have done that forever if my liver would have held out. But, you know, I mean, really, it was just that's the alcoholic's dream, I think. And I just loved it, and it was no responsibility, and it was easy, and I made good money, and it was fun. And if I worked nights, I could usually get there on time. You know, it was pretty easy. And except this one time I had to open for the opening girl. I promised her I'd open. We switched. And, you know, I knew I had to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know. And the night before, normal people would have said, you know, I need to get to bed a little early and watch Johnny Carson or something dumb and go to bed. Not me. I was bowling or something, and I was drunk. I was drunk till 3 or 4 in the morning. And I think I slept an hour and got up, and I got there on time, but I was sick as a dog, and I was hungover. And this girl comes up to me and goes, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Oh, gosh, I'm so hungover." I said, "Actually, I think I'm a little drunk still." And she said, "Here, take one of these. You'll be zipping around in no time." I took one of those, honey. I zipped around for 2 days, okay? And I thought I had found heaven. I mean, this is my solution. And so I zipped around a lot and drank a lot, and you could drink more and not go into a blackout. Well, I thought I found heaven. And so I did that zipping around, and I drank and drank and drank, and I did that for a while, and I met this hymn, you know, because I think booze and boys, they've just got to be, they're like soup and salad, honey. They got to go together, you know, soup and sandwich. And so I had lots of booze and boys stories, you know, which I don't share at the podium, but I had them. And so this, I met this guy, and he owned a bar, and he said, "Would you marry?" I said, "I do, the rest of my life, I do. Free beer and pool, I do." And, you know, he was a big man, a big fellow. He kind of looked like Paul Bunyan, you know. But, you know, he wasn't real faithful, and I don't really share even drunk. I got a bad temper when I'm drunk. I'm just insane. I'm an insane drunk woman. And I, like, fight men drunk, you know. I don't want to fight men today. I mean, they're big, you know. And, I would just knock the heck out of him. He'd knock the heck out of me back. I don't blame him. I mean, I was goofy. And I would cause the scene, and it was just this really sick drama, and a lot of it was very volatile, and I had a big part in it. You know, I don't think that, I think that when I learned to keep my mouth shut and didn't get in anybody's face anymore, nothing seemed to happen to me anymore. I don't know if that's coincidence or what, but that's what's happened for me. And I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous and some Al-Anons that taught me some really neat things about things like that and with alcoholics. And so he and I lasted the entire 6 months. They said it wouldn't last, and they were right. I was still writing thank you letters to people for gifts when we were getting our divorce. And it was horrible. And through that time, in the middle of that, my mother got very, very ill. And I've seen my mother once at 19. I'm 23. And the first time I saw her when I was 19, it was a very horrible experience, and she wasn't that beautiful woman anymore, and she was really old, and she looked very old. She wasn't old. She just, the disease of alcoholism, as it talks about in our book, tears women down really fast, and it was just a bad experience. And because I always thought if I'd had my mother, I would have been different, and if only my mom and I had been together, my life would be better. And I blamed a lot of that on my father and just my circumstances. And it was a great excuse to drink for many, many years. It was a great excuse. And gosh knows I collected excuses to drink. I got a call from her doctor, and they said she was in really bad shape. So I flew to Dallas from California. I live in California. I flew to Dallas and went into Baylor University, and she was in a coma. And the nurse told me, you know, she's you know, maybe the last to go is the hearing, and maybe she could hear you. So I went into her room, and I was like, I'm a tough girl, and I'm like, she was trying to prepare me for what I was going to see, and I'm like, look, I've been through so much, you know, this is like nothing. And my mother had tubes running in and out of her, and she was bloated, and she was the color of mustard. And I don't know if you've ever seen anybody die of cirrhosis, and I believe alcoholism, and it's a very sad thing to see, and she was just not even there. And I just talked to her and read to her, and next day her sisters came, and we discussed things, and we talked about, they would talk about when I was a little girl and all this, and I was so angry. It was stuff. I had just so much stuff inside of me. And I thought, well, why didn't you ever come and get me? You know, and I had all these horrible things, no solution. And I didn't have any booze. I mean, I wasn't drinking for like a day or two. And I'm just crazy. And all I can think of is to get down the street to my mother's apartment, because I knew she had booze there. And here I am visiting my mother, and she's dying of alcoholism, and all I can think about is going to ransack her apartment to find some booze, you know, and that's alcoholism. And so the nurse comes running out. We're sitting in the hall, and they said, you know, you need to come in here right now. And so we went in. I went in, and my mother was sitting up. And the first thing she said to me is, "Will you forgive me?" And I said, "Yes." And I'm so glad I did, because I really learned about forgiveness here in Alcoholics Anonymous. 8 and 9 is a wonderful, they're wonderful steps. And my sponsor was not like, okay, just make a lot of living amends. I had to make a lot of direct amends. And my mother was dead when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, but there's a way to do that. And I'm so grateful to so many of you in my life that have shared those things with me. My mother and I had 3 really great days together, and then she died right out. I had to leave, and I told her I'd be back in a couple of weeks because they weren't sure if she would live 6 months or 6 days. And she died on Good Friday, and she died in a hospital room by herself. And that's alcoholism. That's what really does happen. The thing I know today is there's not a lot of people that die of alcoholism that come back to AA meetings and tell us their story. They just don't. They're not around. They're gone. And it's like, God, don't you wish some of them could? I bet they'd say, "You bet. You bet you better wear a dress at the podium or a skirt and a little dress up. You better get that meeting early." I bet they'd say that. "Why don't you go to 3 and 4 and 5 a week? Why don't you get a sponsor?" Never got a sponsor. "Maybe you ought to work all the steps." Cry them. "Maybe you should read the black letters in the book, not in between the lines." You know, I bet they'd have a lot to tell us, you know, because we never hear their story. They just go away and they die. So I call my dad, and I would go through months at a time, and I would never call him, and I'd never tell him where I was, because I was out doing my deal. When I divorced my husband, there would go 2 or 3 months at a time. I wouldn't even call him. He didn't know where I lived. And so I called my dad, and I told him that Mom had died, and would he please help me bury her? I don't even know why I called him. And he called his sponsor, and he was just wrecked because he felt guilty that he had gotten this beautiful thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and she didn't. My mother had been to AA twice. And she said to me one night, "I'm not like those people." How many times I've heard people in a meeting do that? How many times I've heard people leave AA that say that? It's very sad. I wish she had been. He came back to Oklahoma with me. He hadn't been married to this woman in many years. And he and his sponsor talked about it, and his sponsor said, "You should do that." It was his way of making some sort of amends to her. And he helped us. He helped me and my brother and I bury our mother. And, you know, we all stood around the grave. And that's the first time I ever remember us all being together. And I think she'd like that. And I think about that from time to time, how hard. He didn't say, "You know, I'm not comfortable with that." He never said that. I'm sure he wasn't comfortable with that. He had to go see in-laws that didn't like him very much, you know, that he hadn't seen in years. And the last time he saw him, he was a bad alcoholic, and he was mean to their sister, you know. And he didn't say anything. It wasn't about him anymore. It was, how could he be of service to my brother and I? And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. It is not about me and how I feel. It is about what can I do for you? There are 3 prayers that I have said in AA, and my newcomer prayer was, "Help me." Then it was, "Give me." And today, hopefully, it's "Use me." You know? And that's the deal for me. That's the deal. And my dad was always like that. He was always trying to help people. So I came back, divorced at him, because I figured it was probably all his fault anyway, whatever. And I just went on reckless abandon. I drank, and I started using lots of drugs. Drugs are a part of my story. This is an AA meeting, and I absolutely respect that. But I got into cocaine very heavily, and I got very sick with it and drank. You know, I have no problem with, I'm not an alcoholic and anything. I'm just an alcoholic that used a lot of drugs. That's how I feel about it. And I used that drug. I used it. Really, drugs were more to enhance my drinking. I mean, it's like anything that would enhance my drinking, I was for it, you know, or could keep me awake long enough to keep drinking more. I mean, I had biker friends that would say, you drink, sure do drink a lot for a little girl. I mean, when a big giant man that's bigger than life and has this giant hair coming out of his face says that, you know, you might want to take a look at your drinking, you know? You know, I mean, he's like, you know, I'm like drinking him under a table. And he's like, what is up with you? And so I went on Reckless Abandon, and I met another him. I met him at a bar. Well, where else do you meet him? I certainly didn't go to church. And that was always my favorite stomping grounds. And I was so drunk, I fell off a car, and he picked me up off the parking lot, and we were together for 2 weeks, you know? We didn't even leave each other's side for 2 weeks. I mean, that's the kind of love I did, you know? It's like, oh, my God, this is fabulous. And then you got to go to work and stuff, and that always interferes with the romance. And so we were together, and he, I got pregnant, and he didn't want to be. And so I decided to have this child, and it was just amazing because when I was 8 months pregnant, in fact, this week, 17 years ago, he left me. And I was 8 months pregnant, and I was alone, and I hated myself, and I wished I were dead. And I remember thinking, I wish you could kill me but take care of this baby. I thought this baby would be sweet. I drank and used drugs when I was pregnant, and that is such an awful part of my story for me, but I must tell it, because women told me those things, and I heard things like that when you would come to my town, and I wasn't different anymore, and you made me feel not bad, that I was real sick. When he was born, he was fine, he was healthy, I don't know what it was. I don't want to say God took care of me. I don't believe that. I believe I was just lucky. I believe I just was lucky. I don't think God picks and you get a bad thing to happen, you get a good thing. I don't believe that, and that's not the God of my understanding. I think I just happened to be lucky. I don't think it ever happened again, but I think I'd be lucky. And that young man, I saw that baby, and I loved him with all my heart. I immediately wanted to be the best mom in the world. I was going to learn to bake cookies. I didn't know how, so I was going to learn. And I was going to do all those things. I'd even buy flat shoes and long skirts. You know, I was going to do the deal. I would swear to God, I will straighten up. I meant that from the depth of my soul. And that could not stop alcoholism. I could not stop drinking because of love for a child. If anybody could have done it, I think it would have been my mother and me. You know, my mother, I thought to myself, this is why she couldn't. When I got sober, I realized it wasn't that she didn't love me. It's just she couldn't. She had alcoholism. The book talks about it. We get to a place where we can't live with or without it. I mean, they don't mince words in the book. And so he fixed me for about 2 weeks, and then I was off and running and gunning again, and I'm going to the bars, and I'm doing the things that I hate to do and that I'm doing, and I'm leaving him with people that I hardly know and anything to get a drink. And I met a nice Marine. What the heck? I thought, you know, they take care of the whole country. Surely they can handle me. But that did not work out. I was even too much for a darn Marine, honey. And I moved to Oceanside, and we tried to do that deal, and it didn't work out. And he was a nice guy, but, you know, I'm an alcoholic. And so I think he ran off with a whack or a wave or somebody like that. And I'm alone, and I'm staying at this girl's house, and I'm sleeping on the floor and living in an apartment and live in their house, and she's let me sleep on the floor with my son. And so I get a second job because I got to work and I got to support my stuff. And she has no idea who I really am. I'm a manicurist in the day and I'm a drunk waitress at night. And, you know, she was a nice lady. She was a nice, there were so many nice people. There were so many nice people along the way that tried to help me, you know, and you know, thank God for the people in Al-Anon. They keep us sober. I mean, they keep us alive long enough for us to get here. You know, and we just tear them up. You know, we just break their hearts one after another. And she was so kind. She caught me coming in one night because I would pretend to come in like at a normal hour, and I pretend like, you know what I do is I would come home at 7 or 6:30 in the morning. And I pretend I'd be asleep. You know, and then I'd wake up. Oh, you know, I don't know how I did the stand out. I had no sleep. Well, I know how I did it, drugs, but anyway, and lots of booze. And so. She caught me coming in, you know, and she said, you know, I know you've been doing this, and if it weren't for that little baby, I wouldn't let you stay here if that wasn't for your son. And she said, you need to call your dad. I know your mother's dead, but you need to call your dad. And it was like, oh, God. And my father's a great member of AA. It's like, what, he might, like, hit me with a big book or something, you know. And So I call him, and I'm pretty desperate, and I call, and he didn't answer, but his wife. And he had married a really neat lady in Al-Anon named Vinoy, and they lived in Oklahoma at that time, and she was a black belt Al-Anon. And I didn't know that at the time. I would have had more sense than to call, probably. But what I said was, I want you and Dad to know this. This was my best plan. This is my best idea. I said, I'm going to put Brad in a foster home, and I'm going to walk the streets because I just can't live like this anymore. And she said, now, wait a minute. You know, your dad's doing a fifth step, and he'll call you back. Well, I ran and got drunk. It was like I made some sort of admission. You know, I didn't say, oh, I'm drinking and using. I didn't get all crazy with him now. You know, I just made that little admission. But I had said something, and I was communicating with people that at a level that I hadn't really ever communicated, you know. So she, the next day they called me, and one thing led to another. My father sent me a plane ticket. My father did not send me money. My father did not give me an apartment. My father did not call treatment centers and get me in there. He did not call detoxes. He sent me a one-way ticket to Oklahoma, non-cashable, non-refundable, I tried, ticket. He invented tough love. I mean, he was like the inventor of it, I think. And that's all. He didn't even pick me up at the airport. That's the kind of relationship I walked in Alcoholics Anonymous with my father. My father and I, there was so much tension and so much hurt and so much pain with us two. We could hardly be in the same room together. His wife picked me up and another Al-Anon friend, Susan, and they picked me up, my son and I. And we were a mess. I'd been drinking and trying to hide it, you know, and they knew, and they were kind. They were kind. I was so very sick, and they knew it. And I went home, and I slept, and I slept, and I could not stop sleeping, and I was coming off all this stuff, and I'm not telling anybody, and I'm secretly detoxing, and it was really hard. And I didn't want to tell anybody that I was really sick. And so I didn't, and I just did it by myself. And I started getting better, and no one knew. And, like, well, she knew. I think she knew. My dad's such a goofy alcoholic. Nothing going on here, you know. She goes, how could you not know? He goes, you people are trained to be watching that stuff. Oh, I just loved him. So her eyes are funny, you know. I love that. No, they're not. And so I started, I had to go to something. I didn't want to admit anything. So I went to Al-Anon because in that house you have to go to something if you're going to live there. So I thought, I'll go to Al-Anon. They can drink. Oh. And so I sat in Al-Anon meetings and I was just overwhelmed with the whole thing because I felt so awful for some of these women because, God, they were really, they loved their husbands or sons or daughters or whoever. And I thought, and so one time I said to one, I just went up after me, and I thought this was kind of harmless. I said, oh, have a drink and a Quaalude. They'll come home. And she was like, oh, you know. Of course, it gets back to Vinoy, you know. It's like, oh, my gosh. I was just helping out, you know. And so my Al-Anon sponsor got like a resentment because everybody was coupled off and going to the movies after meeting one night. She goes, well, we're Al-Anons. We could go have a drink. And I said, by God, we can. I'm so happy. I go, there is a God. There is a God. You know, because I'm trying not to drink and go to Al-Anon, and I'm an alcoholic out of my head. And so we went to this place, and it was great. And so she'd order a drink, and I would order a drink, and I'd, you know, sip. And then she'd go to the bathroom. I'd order three shots, another drink, gulp it down. She'd come back and look like I still had half a glass. So then I would go get a drink, and then I'd drink three drinks up there, bring her a drink, and it would be like our second drink. And I looked good. I was bombed out of my mind. And so then everything went well until we went to, like, eat tacos at this place, and I tore down the bathroom door in a blackout. And she's this Al-Anon going, I think I have a problem, you know. She's like, oh, my gosh. So she had to, like, confess to her Al-Anon sponsor, who was my stepmother. I'm busted, so busted. And they're like, there's something not normal about tearing down doors in bathrooms at a restaurant. It's just not, I mean, I tore it off the hinges. Oh, gosh. I'm pretty spooky, you know. And she was out of her head frightened. I don't really remember it. I think she made the whole thing up, of course. Today I even say, oh, Steve, you made that up. You just want to get me in trouble. She goes, no, I don't make up that good a story, Sheila. So anyway, so my father got wind of it, and I got, you know, of course, everybody has to sit down and talk to you. Don't you love that? That's always my favorite. know, let's all visit about it. So then I said, well, you know, the family talk. So I move out. That's my solution. Got to go. See you later. So I moved out. I'd love to say, and then I got sober in AA. That's not it. Sorry, guys. It gets a little worse. You know, like in Bill's story. And there will be 2 more years of this. No, it wasn't that long, though. You know, it's like Bill. I was worn out for Bill. I was like, 2 more years? I think I'm going to kill myself. I read that book. My God. I was pretty done for him. But anyway, so, you know, so it was a little longer than that. But I got my own place and everything and took my son with me. And I, like, would call and bring him over and drop him off. But I didn't have any relationship with him. And so I finally, one night, I had partied too much and done what I always do. I put my son to bed and my roommates were there, and I'd been running around. I was in a blackout. I really don't remember everything that I did, but they were telling me some of the stuff. And I came to the next morning, and my son wasn't in bed with me because we shared a bed, and I couldn't find him, and I ran around the house, and I couldn't find him. He wasn't in any of the roommates' rooms, and I thought he had gone outside and froze to death. It was December 15th, 1984, and it was very, 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 very cold. Very cold that morning. And I'd heard about little children getting outside and they freeze to death, and I thought, my God, I've killed him. And I was just really upset, and she came running out, and she said, what is going on with you? Where have you been? You were crazy when you came home last night. You drink too much, da-da-da-da, the same stuff. And I said, I can't find Bradford. She said, here he is. And he was snuggled underneath her comforter so that I couldn't, when I opened the door to look in the rooms, I couldn't see him. And I never want to forget this as long as I live. He was walking down the hall, and he had little jammies with the feet in them. And he put his arms up, and he said, Mom. And I picked him up, and I said something to the effect of, Mom is going to get help. And I called some people in AA because, you know, you all are so wonderful. And some of you women would give me your phone numbers because, you know, you could spot me. You spotted me. And you gave me your phone number. And I called this one lady. She wasn't home, but her husband was. And he said, I know a little bit more about you than I probably should. I know your dad so well. Sheely's in our group. And he said, are you drunk right now? I said, no. And he said, well, get your butt over here. And I did. And I went to their house. And he set me down at the kitchen table and gave me with a big book and a cup of coffee. And he 12-stepped me, you know. And he said, you don't ever have to feel this way, even if you don't want to. And you don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to. I may have heard this before, I don't know. But it's like music to my ears. And I said, okay. And he said, and everything is going to be all right. And I believed him. I don't know why, and I don't know where it came from, but I really believed him. And I had never felt like that except drunk. You know, I never really felt that things could be all right. And so I told him, I said, okay. He started lining out a plan of action. She came home and kind of finished the job off, you know. She got home and goes, oh, good. And a fresh one, you know, how we are. They still have alcohol in their breath. Yeah, my kind. You know, I love it. Ah, that's fun. God, bring it on, girl. And you know, and then all of a sudden I get this idea. You know, I'm full of them. I get this one last idea, I thought, I hope. I said, you know, but I don't want to go to Dad's meeting. I said, I want to go to my own meeting. I want to be my own person in AA. Oh, lovely. He said, well, Sheila, that's a really good group. It's real structured, and it's been there a long time. And, you know, it's, you know, so what? I mean, it'll be your group, too. And he said, well, I don't want to go to that group. And he said, well, he said, that's a good group, and you should be there. And I hope you're there tonight, you know, 8 o'clock. So time gets rolling around. I'm already thinking, I don't really know. I think I might have gone overboard. Do I really need to go to that? You know, we don't remember the pain of a week or a month or a minute ago. I mean, I just forgot. It was like gone. And it's like the book talks about that. And well, then these roommates, they drink a lot now. I'm not saying these are like, you know, teetotalers. They're like, aren't you supposed to be going to like a meeting tonight? You know, when your drinking buddies start talking about you going to a meeting, you might want to look at your drinking. And I said, well, you know, Brad and everything. Oh, we'll watch him. There goes my excuse. And I said, okay, and so I set out to go to my meeting. And then I realized while I'm driving, I have no idea where any other groups are. I've never been to them. And it was kind of late to go search one out. I didn't know where any other groups were. I'd only been to their group, you know, for Al-Anon meetings. So I went, and my dad was there. And, of course, they were like, what is she doing here? Because they don't really see me that much anymore. And so I just sat in the back of the room with my tightest jeans on, looking so wonderful. I'm sure I was reeking. And the people that 12 sent me that day, they were there, and it came. They have a part. I don't know if you do it in your meeting. So, is there anyone here with 30 days or less? Will you please raise your hand, not to embarrass you? And so, yeah, that's right, you do. And so I said, that's what they said, and I didn't want to do it, you know, because it's embarrassing. Who wants to do that? And see anybody else raising their hand? You know, I'm doing this in my head. I'm not raising my hand. Well, then you know how they look over at you because they know that you have. To, yeah. Yeah. Don't you like doing that now? I love it. Yeah. It's stick around long enough, you can look at them too, you know. So, and I know they're looking, so I go, oh, I kind of scratch my head. Oh, you know, I do that. Well, my dad happened to turn around. He was sitting way up in the front. He happened to turn around, and he turned around real fast, and he's like, oh, my God. So he got called on. We had tag participation for 30 minutes, and call-up participation. He got called on, and he said that he got called on. He said, oh, I just want to say that I saw my daughter raise her hand. I saw my daughter raise her hand, and he said, I hope she gets this gift. And he said, of all the Christmas presents in the world, this one's the best. And my heart started to melt, you know, just a little bit. It started to just start just kind of hit. And I thought, well, maybe that old SOB does love me. Oh, maybe. You know, and I started this journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've had, I would love to say I was a stellar AA member. I was not. I wouldn't want to sponsor me the first 6 months. I wouldn't want me the first 6 months. I was rebellious and I was angry. I was so full of anger. And God sent a sponsor that, you know, my first sponsor quit going to meetings. I got this other lady and, well, I got arrested. A little arrested, sober. It was not a big deal. My dad's head almost flew off, but it was fine. it was a little misunderstanding with a few checks back in California, but it'll be all right. And I hand my license over because I get pulled over for something like going right on red. There's like one light in Norman if you go right on red. And I went, I didn't even see a light. So I went right on red and he pulled me over and I hand my license over, happy, joyous, and free because I am sober. I hand him my license and he says, could you step out of the car? And I know what that means. I'm like, I said, yeah, but I'm sober. I don't have to step out of the car anymore. And then he starts searching my car after I said that. And then he took me to jail and I kept saying, but I'm sober. And so I have to call up my dad and thank God Vinoy answers again. And I'm like, she goes, where have you been? We've been waiting for you for hours because they had Brad, you know. And I said, well, I'm sober. Goes, Where are you? I said, I'm in jail. She goes, ha ha ha. I go, I'm in jail and it's $300. Give me how long. She said, and I said, she goes, GM, Sheila's in jail. He's gone. I mean, he flipped out. Gary knew my dad. I mean, he was a big old guy. He looked like Popeye, you know. Oh, my God. And who needed a phone? I could have heard him across the town, you know. And he's screaming, leave her in there. And I'm like, no, don't leave me in here. I'm sober. I swear I'm sober. You know, that's all I can say. She goes, well, GM, she's sober. I don't give a good God. You know, she's in jail. I don't have any money. You know, he's screaming his head off. Then she goes, GM, the baby. We've got the baby. Oh, she was just pleading. Oh, she did a good job. Oh, good job. You know, I was so proud of her. She did a good job. And so finally goes, okay, fine. She goes, I'll be there to pick you up. And thank God she came because he would have killed me. So she came and he did. He bailed me out of jail. I mean, he gave her the money and stuff to bail me out of jail. And because I kept saying, I'm sober. And the jail lady walks by and goes, who cares? Rude. I said, it's very important to be sober when you call for bail money in my house. You know? And so I got a little arrested. And my sponsor had just fired me on the way over while I was driving. My sponsor had fired me because she was getting ready to leave AA. I didn't know that. But she had fired me, and then I turned around and I got arrested, and I had no sponsor, and I'm on step 3. I mean, I was pretty upset. This is a bad time in my life. And I thought, turn your will in your life over the care of God. I'm in jail, and I have no sponsor. This is not working. AA is not working. So I got this other sponsor, you know, the one you're never going to get. I am never getting her. And I got her. I was insane. I was in jail. You have weird things. You know, you find God in jail. Let me tell you what. I came to Jesus. Anyway, so... So I call her up, you know, it's like I get home and I call her and I say, I have no sponsor, will you please? You know, because she might make me do something or she might see through me. And that was the deal and I knew it. And she walked me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and my life became incredible. And I owe everything. I really do. This woman was a good woman. She stopped going to meetings at 6 years and 11 months. And, I still to this day, you know, I thank her for the things, the foundation she gave me. She gave me an incredible foundation. She doesn't go to AA anymore. And I still see her. She gets her hair done at the salon I work at. I'm still a manicurist. I still do nails. I mean, some of us have great, wonderful rocket scientist stories. I'm not one. I was a manicurist drunk. I'm a manicurist sober. I'm making tons of amends, and I don't paint anybody's knuckles anymore. So y'all came in pretty shaky, you know. Whoa, let me get that knuckle for you, baby. You know, I was so sorry. But I really do a good job today. I really do, and I really try hard, you know. And so I really make amends that way. And you know, Norm Alpie used to say, you know, if you're a ditch digger and you get here, you'll be a better ditch digger, you know. And I'm just a better ditch digger today. And and I love what I do, and I have a great life, I really do. And so I get out of jail, and Dad's mad, and he then 2 days later, when his sponsorees got thrown in jail, and he bailed him out, and through Alcoholics Anonymous, he forgave me because he wasn't upset with him, and he had to look at, why am I so upset with her? It was the same almost exact thing, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous is how we have come together. My sponsor said, do 2 things a day nice for your father, and I did. I used to bring in the paper, and I would make him hot water for his hot tea. My dad drank hot tea. We were both morning people. He gave me my love of sports. I absolutely love sports. He gave me my love of sports. We could read the newspaper together, only sports section, because we liked the same team, so we wouldn't fight. And we started very, very slowly on this journey. And I was willing to try. I was willing to try to be a good daughter. And And because I took actions that went against what I thought and I felt, my father and I had a coming together that was only of God in Alcoholics Anonymous. I absolutely adored my father when he died. And we had 11 really great years together because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am forever grateful. How could I not come to Des Moines, Iowa and say thank you for what you've given me and the life I have today? My dad and I sat at the International 5 years ago, and we held hands and watched the flag ceremony, and we had tears in our eyes. We listened to Sharon Barker talk about the healing her and her father had, and we both had tears in our eyes. You know, this program has given me so much. You know, that little boy, that was so sweet. He is like 16, and he's like the best kid. I don't know what happened, but he is. He's so good. He's so cute. You would love him. Anyway, he is so cute. And he's a good kid. I mean, he's like good. I mean, he doesn't even drink or anything. It's ridiculous. I smell his breath all the time. He's fine. And I want to tell you a story. His semi-formal was tonight. And it was supposed to be last Saturday, and it snowed in Oklahoma, so they closed everything down. What the heck? I was so irate. And so we find out Tuesday that they've rescheduled it, not for March, like they said, but for this weekend. And I was sick to my stomach. I mean, I love you, and I love my children. You know, you're my heart, and so are they. And I called my sponsor. She said, there's nothing you can do. She said, you did everything you could. You didn't book anything for January because you knew he had a formal coming up sometime in January. And then you didn't book anything till after you found the date. And you did all the right stuff, honey. And this is just one of those things. And he's, you know, he's a good kid. So I tell him, and he goes, I am so mad. I said, please don't be mad at me. I said, oh, please. And he said, I'm not mad at you. He said, I'm mad at school. I said, oh, just an entire institution. That's okay. That's my boy. And he said, Mom, you did everything. He said, you did everything you could. And he said, and I know that you'll go up there and you'll do a good job. And he said, and I'll be here and I'll be okay. We'll take lots of pictures. And he said, please don't feel bad. He said, I can tell you've been crying. I know you've been upset. And he said, because if you keep feeling bad, I'm going to start feeling bad. And I said, okay. I said, okay, I'm going to try. He said, I want to show you something. And I said, what? And he clicked on his computer. And he said, I wasn't going to show you this. I turned it in a couple of weeks ago, but I thought I'd show you this. And on that computer, he said, what our class had to do was give an award to somebody. You had to make up an award and then write it and then give it, turn it in. And he said, my award went to you. And it said, Dear Mr. President, in your search for Mother of the Millennium, I want to tell you why I think mine is. And I thought to myself, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is all. It's nothing that I've done. You all have taught me how to be somebody's mom. You taught me how to be Brad's mom. And Daniel, I have a little one, Daniel. You know, I didn't know how to be a mom when I got here. I was so selfish and self-centered. All I thought about was me, and everything was about me. And you showed me how to give baths and do the right thing and buy summer socks and winter socks and goopies and pajamas. And, you know, I didn't understand all this stuff. I remember I went in this lady's house and it smelled so good and I couldn't figure it out and I'm nosy and I don't want to ask questions because I'm not like stupid. So I went around sniffing and looking and I couldn't find out and finally I just said, what is that? She said, it's potpourri. And I said, Lord, I got to get some. I got it all over my mouth. You know, you ladies have taught me how to be a lady. You know, you taught me how to be a lady. You taught me how to do the right thing. and act with some dignity. And I didn't have any dignity when I sold my dignity many, many times out there. And you showed me how to do that. My son loves me today, and I love him. You know, I'm home for my children. I'm in the home. I'm in the room. You know, and I was really upset. And I called him. I was sitting here at the table when I got here, and that's who I was talking to. And he had his dad's cell phone. And so he saw my cell phone number come up, and he picked it, and he goes, "Mom." And I said, "Hi." And I said, "Do you look really handsome?" He goes, "No, I look really ugly. I didn't shower." I said, "What?" And he's just kidding. He's really funny. Oh, God. You're hysterical. I'm in Des Moines. You can get away with it, huh? And you know, he's like on his way, and he's driving, and he had his buddy, and they got the corsages, and you know, he's just, you know, I said, "Just have a great time." He said, "Oh, we're gonna have a blast." And he said, "He goes, are you having a good time?" I said, "Yeah, I'm having a good time." He said, "Okay, sounds like everybody's having a good time there." He could hear everybody in the background, you know. He goes, "Everything's okay, Mom, and everything's just the way it's supposed to be right now." Oh, please. He said to me, "Do you need to read something in the book about acceptance? Isn't there something in there about that?" He's so cute. I'm going to tell you a couple more stories, and I'm going to get down. And you all have been a great crowd, and I really have enjoyed you. I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous to a nice, normal guy. He's not really normal. Why would a normal? I was talking to the, on the way here. He, you know, everyone says, "Is Dave normal?" I said, "Well, he claims he's normal." I mean, it's like, you know. You know, how do, you know, listen, you know, here's my credentials. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I have 2.5 years of sobriety. I'm an illegitimate child. I'm from California, and, you know, by God, I'm a lot of fun. You know what? I mean, that's not like, you know, normal guy qualifying kind of gal, you know. I mean, you just don't run after somebody that's in AA, you know. And I said, "Yeah, and my dad's an alcoholic. My dad's an alcoholic," you know. And so he said he used to. He goes, "Okay, then I used to be normal before I met you." I said, "Okay, that's better." So I met this nice guy, and he's not an AA around, obviously. He's a great guy. And we got married. My dad gave me away, and my brother was there, and my stepsister Tracy was there, and Vinoy was mother of the bride, and my brother came, and it was a neat day. And my aunts and uncles and a lot of people came. It was really beautiful, and it was in a backyard, and all my AA friends were there, and all his musician friends. Oh, it was quite a kill. Oh, that was quite fun. It was fun to watch the musicians and the alcoholics mingle, and the musicians kept coming up, "This is the best wedding I've ever been to that I didn't drink at." And then the alcoholics were like, "All right, you know, 12-step call." And I got pregnant right away, and we were going to wait a year, and I got pregnant right away, right after we were married, and I felt really bad, and I said, "Dave, I'm sorry." I said, "I know we wanted to wait a year," and he said, "Sheila, it's okay, we're married." I mean, I was like really upset. I said, "Oh yeah, I can call Dad." You know, I was so happy, you know, like, "Oh my God, this is like right," you know. And so, and I said to Dave, I said, "You know, Dave, when I was pregnant, my father was the last person to know that I was pregnant with Brad, because I didn't want him to know. I was 5.5 months pregnant before my father found out. And that's the kind of relationship we brought to you." And I said to him, "Could I please," I said, I've made direct amends for these things to my dad, "but could I please make some living amends and let him be the very, very, very first person to know?" He said, "Absolutely." And so I called him and I said, "You know, Dad," I said, "we're going to have a baby." And he said, "Well, by God, I think that's great." And I said, "And you're the very first person to know." And he had tears in his voice, and I could hear him. And he said, isn't life good, Sheila? And he said, "We owe it all to AA, don't we?" And I said, "Yes, we do, Daddy. Yes, we do." In my 6th month, I found out I was pregnant with twins, and I was so excited. I was so happy. It's one of my happiest moments. Anytime I think about it, it's one of the best moments of my life. Unfortunately, in my 7th month of pregnancy, one was a boy and one was a little girl, and the little girl got sick, and she died. And I had to carry both those babies till the end, and I went to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you carried me. My heart hurt. My heart was so broken. And you didn't care if I sat in a meeting and just had tears rolling down my face, you know. You guys took me to meetings, and then when I couldn't go anymore because I had to go on bed rest, you came to my house. And my husband was pretty impressed with that. He was pretty impressed with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I kept doing the deal and doing the same thing, and I just kept saying, okay, you know, I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen. And Daniel was born 1 month early, and he weighed 7 pounds, and he had some respiratory problems, but he's okay today. And, you know, we're so grateful. And I heard somebody gave me a tape, and, you know, I just bought a tape. It was Norm Alpe. I love Norm Alpe. And he talked about leaving the hospital after a child of his had died. And
He said, you know, and he said, what I had to do, because I was feeling so sorry for myself, and he said, what I had to do was I had to look not at what I had lost, but what was left. And it just fixed me. And I knew everything was going to be all right. My father got diagnosed with cancer in May of 96, and my heart broke. I just was so upset. It was in February of 96. And I went to see him, and we sat on a porch together, and he said, baby, he came outside, and he said, baby, are you okay? And he lived in Palm Springs. I said, no, I'm really not. I said, it was terminal, and there was nothing anybody could do. And he said, I said, no, I'm not. I said, I don't want you to die. I said, I can't imagine my life without you. I said, well, you get it all together, and now you've got to go. And he said, I know, honey. And he said, but, you know, I believe that we're right in the middle of acceptance. And if I believe what 449 has said all these years, I better start acting like it. And then he said this. He said, Sheila, I'm handing the baton to you. It's your turn now. He said, you get out there on the fire line and you help those women. And he said, it's your turn now. And it gets kind of heavy sometimes, that baton. I don't know how they held it for so many years, our old timers. You know, I feel like a pup, you know? And he said, you know, I know you can do it. And I just thought, oh my God. You know, so of course I'm going to suit up and show up and come to meetings and do the deal. My father died 3 months to the day he was diagnosed. He died, and he was surrounded by his wife on one side, and I got to hold his hand on the other, and his sponsorees were there, and grand sponsorees. And he left to go into the big meeting in the sky with lots of love from you all. And I remember thinking, you know, isn't this nice for him, how much love he was surrounded with, how wonderful it is to be a sober AA that gets to go to the big meeting. And I had a rough time after he died. I really, really missed him. It wasn't like, okay, I know this is God. And, you know, it's like, God, do I have no faith? What's wrong with me? You know, and I mean, my heart was just broken. And my dad always wanted me to have braces. And so in April, I got braces. For those of you sitting in the back of the room, this is not, my tongue is not pierced. I've had old-timers come up to me going, well, I thought your tongue was pierced. I go, and? You know, but so I kept seeing this silver stuff. I'm like, well, that's my braces. So my dad, we talked about it on the way to the International, and he just felt really bad that he could never get me braces. And he said, you always had that sweet little face and those crooked old teeth. And I just feel bad that I never got you braces. You know, that's something a dad should do. And I said, well, Dad, you were, you know, kind of trying to just be sober one day at a time and blah, blah, blah. And he said, I know, but it just, I said, Daddy, it's on the list. I'm a big girl now, and if something didn't happen when I was growing up, I could make it happen now. You know, it's like, don't even worry about it. It's right on the list, right over there with roof, groceries. You know, it's on that list that you have. Sidewalk, you know, those lists. And so he said, okay. And I got my braces on a Monday, and I went outside, and I looked up to heaven, and I go, I got my braces on. And then I get in the car, and my alcoholic mind starts. Wonder if he can see him. Wonder if he's in heaven. Wonder if there's really heaven. You know, that dark thinking. Gosh, and it's just, it doesn't get better for me. It keeps going, and it's like a Drano, you know. And it just goes. I wonder if there's really heaven. I wonder if it's just dark where he went. I mean, I'm crazy. Thank God for cell phones. So I got the cell phone out. I called somebody I sponsor. Hi, how are you today? Blah, 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 blah. Good. I call another one. You know, I can't do this. You know, I can't do this. This is too dark and too scary. Wednesday, a month before, I'd already committed to go to this place called First Step. It's for where women are like, it's like First Step prison. You know, that's where they are. We got lost going out there. We could not find it. We found the men's facility, and everybody said, you know, we're 30 minutes late for this meeting. We can just turn around. I'll call them tomorrow and tell them we'll come another time. I said, no, let's go back to the men's facility. They can call over to the women's facility, give us directions. At least we've shown up and given them something. And they said, we kind of thought you'd say that. And I said, yes, that's right. So we go to the men's facility, we call them, we get over there. We've only got 20 minutes, and they will not let you have any more than that. I mean, they have 1 hour, and if nothing happens, too bad. They've got to eat some more and go to bed. Oh, the love. Anyway, so I said, all right, that's fine. Instead of reading out of the 12 and 12, we're going to do step two. Let's do like a panel. There were four of us. Let's do 5 minutes each. So we did. And so then a couple of the girls had shared, and then it got to my turn. And I talked about, you know, you can have anything you want in Alcoholics Anonymous if you're willing to work for it. And if things didn't happen for you growing up, that doesn't mean that it's never going to happen. You're going to just have to make it happen. And if you, you know, suit up, show up, and clean up, you can have anything you want in life. And you got to help others. And I was talking about that, and then I talked about getting my braces on, and I said, you know, I got these braces on. I didn't have them as a kid, but I have them now. And I said, how I said it was, I hope my dad danced in heaven. And the room was shaped, you know, it was just a room, and the women were kind of sitting like in half circles in front of us, and there was like room across, and then we were at a panel up front. And there were probably 50 women in this room. And this woman straight across the room from me, I noticed all of a sudden, I looked at her and I said, where did you get that shirt? And she said, out of the donation closet. I said, when? She said, tonight. And I said, stand up. And she did. And she was wearing my father's plumbing shirt. I said, well, honey, that's my dad's plumbing shirt you have on. It's a Jim Shaw plumbing on it. I mean, it's his. She said, well, I got it out of that closet. I said, well, you know, that business has been gone. I mean, he's been dead 3 years. That business hasn't been in business in 3 years. And I said, and when it was in Los Angeles, California. How did you get that shirt in Oklahoma? She said, I don't know. And one of the girls that was sitting there, she came over and she had tears in her eyes. And she said, God's telling you that your dad saw your braces. And I doubt my God so much. I feel so bad, you know. He loves me so much. He loves us so much. And I doubt him. And I felt so bad. I said, God, I'm so sorry. I doubt you one more time. You know? One more time. I doubt you and I'm so sorry. But I know exactly what that was. If that girl had been sitting anywhere else in the room, I would never have seen it. Because there were so many women in there, I wouldn't have seen her. She would have been behind somebody. If we hadn't gone one more mile, if I'd given up. If I'd said, oh, well, you're right. We tried. Too bad. You know, but you all taught me, go the extra mile, Sheila, and do a little bit more than you should. And I'm so grateful. I have a sponsor today. Her name's Peg Martin. She's a wonderful woman. She saved me at 8 years sober. I was just lost and goofy, you know, and she came to the Canyon Conference, a conference my father started, and she spoke, and I was touched, and I knew that I hadn't had direction in a long time. I had had a sponsor, but I was not getting direction in how to live my life sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and some sort of spirituality with it. And she came into my life, and I absolutely love her, and she's been just wonderful. She came to my father's funeral, and she was one of the people that spoke at my dad's funeral, and I will always love her for doing that. You know, and I know that if you're new here tonight, you know, I hope that if you didn't hear something in this meeting, come back to another one. There's tons of them. You know, and the thing is that what has happened for me is that I just went places I didn't want to go, shook hands with people I didn't really like. You know, they probably didn't like me either. I'm sure of it. You know, and I just tried. I thought, I'm going to give this thing a whirl because I was fresh out of ideas and I didn't have any more plans. If you're fresh out of ideas and you have no more plans, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.